Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
The last few weeks have been tumultuous for the South African Jewish community. And what started as a post on Facebook by a company certainly that I hadn't heard of, selling goods, food items that I don't even eat, certainly probably shouldn't eat, has become what I believe one of the greatest crises that our community has ever faced. And it indicates for me a number of things, that there's been a level of discontent in the community that desperately needs to be addressed. And that many of the issues in the past have not been resolved in the minds of the community. To me, the story has a personal angle. I care deeply for this community. I care for the chief rabbi, who is my family. And I care for Kathy Kaler, who has now become part of the story, not because of a personal vendetta, but because she has been overwhelmed by a tsunami of negativity around the UOS. And she could not in clear conscience ignore it. It was more complicated for me, as I was not in studio when this whole story actually developed. In truth, actually, as often happens when one is dealing with a loss, and in this case my father, I didn't even care about what was going on in community matters. Add my personal conflict to the mix, and I chose not to be involved. But following Friday, the shared recording of a meeting, I realized that the story is bigger than me, and I needed to do what I could to resolve, even though I'm aware that when the news cycle is over and everybody's talking of the next big thing, I will be left with possible damage to my family. That said, I still can't stand by. Why? Because although the story might have started with a public post from Honeyfields, it was actually never about them. It was simply a spark that ignited a firestorm that threatens to burn so much more. As Jews, we have never been afraid of a robust argument. The Talmud is testimony to this. We debate, we argue, we fight, and we do it. Boy, do we do it with passion. But there is a caveat. It needs to be done l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, not for our egos, not for the sake of winning, simply for the sake of heaven. And in truth, that's actually what makes this so much easier. I have the privilege of being close to both Chief Rabbi Warren Goldstein and to Kathy Kaler. And I know that both have dedicated their lives to this community. Both of them wake up each day with the sole purpose of serving the South African Jews. And both have the interest of the community branded into their souls. That means that this is a discussion, l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven. It is a discussion that needs to be had, and there are answers that need to be heard and need to be challenged. And as long as it's done with respect and as long as it's about achieving a positive outcome, this needs to happen. The rule of engagement is simple. There'll be no biting, pinching, or pulling of hair. There'll be no personal attacks, and questions will be directly addressed. Please feel free to voice your thoughts, 34519, that is the SMS line, or telegram us on 061-895-1019. This is The Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. I am Howard Feldman. I'm going to hand over to Kathy Kaler to conduct the interview.
Rabbi, looking at the UOS, there's four areas that I think we need to cover. One is the structure of the UOS so that the community understands.
Sorry, Kathy, just before that, I just want to just clear up one thing, because I think, you know, can't get into the interview without clearing up what happened on Friday, because I think that's a crucial element, you know, of all of this. Even before, and I'm happy to answer all of the questions and give whatever time available, you know, to that. But just, on Friday, made like very serious allegations.
Yes, I agree. They are serious. I agree. They are serious.
I want to just take this opportunity to present the facts to the community, with regards to that. Because the way that it was portrayed was that it was the meeting that I had with the rabbis on Thursday was a secret meeting to plan a punishment for you.
Yep.
And I want to firstly point out that the meeting was not secret. The email that went out to the rabbis concerning the meeting were 157 rabbis on the email invitation, inviting them to my Zoom room. Also, you should know that I meet regularly with the rabbis. In fact, almost every single week, and have done for many months. It's these regular weekly meetings that have helped keep our community together through COVID-19, because we debated and closed our shuls together and reopened our shuls together. So it's been a very important part. So all issues of importance in our community are brought to these rabbis' meetings. And on Thursday, we brought, I put on the agenda the question, the issues around the kashrut that had been raised in the public domain. And I gave, the meeting was an hour and a half, and I gave an opportunity to the Beis Din and to the kosher department to give presentations and to take questions from the rabbis. Those presentations and questions took up 90% of the
Chief Rabbi, can I ask you to move through this quite quickly, because we've got a lot to get through. No, I'm not arguing it's important, but if you can just move through this fairly quickly.
But in the last 10 minutes of the meeting, so the agenda of the meeting was for the kashrut department to present its side of it to the rabbis. In the last 10 minutes of the meeting, a number of rabbis, two rabbis, raised the question about how Chai FM has been dealing with this matter, and I felt, and you can say rightly or wrongly, and I'm happy to have that debate. I felt, and I said to the rabbis, that I felt that the way that Chai FM had handled this entire episode was one-sided and biased, and we can have that debate, and be fair to make another argument on it. But that's what I said, and then I said that maybe we should form a subcommittee. I said maybe, and we didn't actually physically form it already, but I said maybe we'll form a subcommittee in order to make a mecha. And here I think is the crucial thing, Kathy, where I think that you made a mistake. Mecha is a Hebrew word, mecha'a, memchet aleph hay, and it is translated as objecting, making a verbal protest to something which you perceive to be a wrongdoing. And that is what we were talking about. You mistranslated that word to say a punishment or a rebuke.
I gave a few options because it's used in different contexts.
But that's a mistranslation. And on the base of the mistranslation of calling it a punishment, you then said publicly that I am physically intimidating you to the point where you feel physically unsafe. Now that's a very serious allegation and has no basis in fact at all. You see, the problem is when you eavesdrop into a meeting that you weren't invited to, and the meeting is in jargon and we're speaking in Hebrew because there's a Talmudic and Hebrew terminology, you need to translate the words properly. And as a result, you've leveled an allegation at me and by extension also at the rabbis of physically intimidating you to the point
that I didn't say it was a physical intimidation. People just heard what they heard.
No, if you have a look carefully at your transcript, you will see that you said you don't feel, you're feeling unsafe.
And that's true.
Yes. But the word mocha, if it's correctly translated, is talking about a verbal objection to something, and that is part of the democratic process. In other words, if there's a debate that's happening.
But
Kathy, this is a very important point because you have leveled a defamatory allegation against me. I have to have the opportunity to clear that allegation.
Okay, which I think I've given you now. We need to get into the interview.
I actually want to stop this.
No, but I'm sorry. I need an opportunity to say to you, and I'm saying this in public, you've made a terrible mistake in that.
So Chief Rabbi, are you not going to actually get into the questions? Because we are now at 8:19. So we are nearly 20 minutes into this. You were given an opportunity, but you can't take up the whole interview with it. Otherwise, it's pointless.
I understand. But you can't make a public allegation of the fact that I am intimidating another human being and that I'm intimidating the media. You cannot make a public allegation like
I
that.
I played the audio. The community heard it for themselves. I didn't have to make any allegations.
I'll tell you what. I'm stopping this, Chief Rabbi. It right now. Either we carry on. You've made your point. You said it was inaccurate. And you said that Kathy claimed that she was physically intimidated. She says she didn't say that. People heard what they want. We can argue about this now for the next 40 minutes. and we will get absolutely nowhere. The issue is either we're going to have this conversation or we are not going to have this conversation.
I'm happy to have the conversation. I'm very happy to have the conversation, but you can't, as a radio station, put out fake news and put out allegations which have no basis in fact, which are defamatory allegations against the
Okay, so are you not going to, are you saying that you are not moving on to the questions?
I'm happy to go on to the questions.
But then we need to do that.
Publicly, I'm putting here publicly.
You put it publicly. You put it on record. It's on record.
That this is defamatory and that I demand a retraction from the station on that. I will go on with the questions. I'm happy to deal with the questions now, but I'm putting this on public record. This is defamatory. It is not.
Okay, I think you've made that statement now probably 5 or 6 times. Either we're going to carry on or we are not carrying on with the interview. Are you happy to carry on with the interview?
I'm happy to carry on with the interview.
Okay, fantastic.
Let's go.
So, we're looking at 4 separate, as discussed with the Chief Rabbi, we're looking at 4 separate areas. One is the structure of the UOS so that we can understand as a community who the UOS is, what the structure is, just so we can get our head around it. The second area that we're going to discuss is the financials, which has come up a lot. The third is Kashrut, and the fourth is, of course, the Shabbos Project, which is something that, is nice and positive. Looking at the structure of the UOS, can you give us a sense of the organogram? So who sits at the top of the UOS?
The UOS is called the Union of Orthodox Synagogues.
Yeah.
It is the umbrella organization of the Orthodox synagogues of this country. It has within it 3 divisions. It has within it the Beth Din, Office of the Chief Rabbi, and the Kosher Department.
Okay.
Those are the 3 divisions of the UOS. Each one of those 3 divisions reports to a board, which is made up primarily of non-executive directors who are elected in terms of the UOS constitution by delegates, which the shuls send to conferences.
Okay. Who's the CEO of the UOS?
The UOS doesn't have a CEO. The UOS has a structure which each department runs itself. In other words, each department has autonomy to run itself. They directly report, each department reports directly to the board. A number of years ago, when there were significant operational and financial problems in the UOS turned to me and to Rabbi Kutztag to form an executive management team to help with some of the restructuring and the fixing up of the UOS in order to modernize it and in order to improve the organization and help it find its footing. And that was a temporary measure put in place, which now the organization is looking towards another restructure in order to set aside that temporary situation. So that now that the situation and the organization has been stabilized and it's heading forward, going into the future to look at a new modernization of the organization, looking all the time to adapt and to improve itself, because communal organizations need to go on a journey of modernization and improvement. And so all the time it's experimenting in order to be able to get those structures right.
All right. What role does the Beth Din play?
So the Beth Din as an institution is absolutely vital. The Beth Din plays a number of roles. Firstly, there's no specific order in this. Overall, the vision statement of the Beth Din is to provide the halachic infrastructure and halachic direction for the South African Jewish community. And it does so and provide vital halachic services to the South African Jewish community. So in that respect, a lot of these debates have been coming around kashrut, but if you have a look at it in the kosher department, so there the heksher sits with the Beth Din. And so the Beth Din is the institution that has to take ultimate halachic responsibility.
Yeah.
For the ultimate halachic responsibility for the kashrut of the ingredients of the various things, and not only that, just for the general fact that it is kosher, so they set the halacha and they set the halachic policy. Then the kosher department, in respect of kashrut, What they do then is they are the operational arm of the kashrut. So that means they've got to make sure that there are mashgichim where they need to be. They need to make sure that they're factory inspectors. They need to make sure that they have a food technologist and a food compliance person and a data manager and all of that. That's the operational side. But the Beth Din ultimately signs off on the kashrut. That means every certificate of any company, a food producing company that comes along has to be signed off by Dayan, and any food establishment services that opens is signed off by Dayan. So that's the kashrut that the Beth Din does. The other thing that the Beth Din does then is all of the things that we need to be able to live as Jews in South Africa. It would be unthinkable to live as Jews in South Africa without these things. It is marriage authorization. So when people want to get married, they submit their ketubah and their marriage details to say that halachically they can. Then the marriage is registered at the Beth Din. So, you know, people have then always, and the ketubah is approved by the Beth Din, means that's then it's recognized globally and internationally. The Beth Din has an outstanding reputation internationally. We have outstanding Dayanim, Dayan David Badil, Dayan Yoel Smith, and Dayan Gidon Fox, who are doing outstanding work. And then they work together with their colleagues in Cape Town. It's actually one Beth Din with Cape Town, with Dayan Mazels and Dayan Liebenberg in Cape Town. So they actually operate really as one Beth Din. So there's marriage registration, there's getting the divorce, conversions, the Dinei Torah, the arbitrations, and then also just maintaining halachic standards on things like mikveh, on brit milah, on tefillin, mezuzah, all of those things. So the Beth Din ensures that we have the halachic parameters for everything that is needed in Jewish life.
Rabbi Kustak used to be the Av Beth Din. Who's the Av Beth Din now?
At the moment, there isn't an Av Beth Din at the moment. The three Dayanim in Johannesburg and the two in Cape Town, they all work together as a committee. It's not unprecedented in South African history when the late Av Beth Din, Rabbi Rosenzweig, a great Talmid Chacham, who actually came from Telz in Europe, when he passed away as the Av Beth Din, there was a gap of maybe 20 years before Rabbi Kustak was appointed as the Av Beth Din following it. So there are ways of, and there's local precedent and international precedent for a Beth Din to function without a Rosh Beth Din, and they work together as a committee. They're wonderful. They respect one another, and what they've done is they take the different aspects of the work and they've divided it up. So, for example, Dayan Gidon Fox, he's got the kashrut portfolio. That means he sits in on all of the operational meetings of Rabbi Dovi Goldstein and his team. He sits in there representing the Beth Din, so that the Beth Din has like a hands-on approach to all of the operations. So they're not like distant from the operations because he's there representing them. And then the other Dayanim, they've divided up the portfolio. One deals with Gittin, and Rabbi Yoel Smith, for example, is in charge of the Dinei Torah, the monetary arbitrations. Dayan David Badil is in charge of the Gittin and the conversions. So they divide up the work. Each one has a portfolio. They're meeting regularly. They're great friends, and they're running it together as equals, and in the meantime it's working. I mean,
Okay, Rabbi, what function does the office of the chief rabbi serve?
So that's the third division of the UOS. Office of the chief rabbi is essentially to provide macro leadership to the macro Jewish leadership based on Torah values to the Jewish community, and to promote Torah practice, to promote Torah thought, to bring the community closer to Judaism, but also to do everything to uplift and to support Jewish life in South Africa. So the one part of it is a spiritual educational dimension, which I have tried to fulfill through things like Shabbos Project, Generation Sinai in Daba, the Base Midrash Project in King David schools, in Herzliya schools. It is through weekly Parsha Shiurim. It is through teaching and reaching out to as many people as possible. And then there's the other thing, which is to uplift Jewish life in South Africa to the best of my ability. And so that mandate I have fulfilled, for example, seeing to in the financial area, seeing to the establishment of AutJet, which is a mentorship program to help entrepreneurs, the establishment recently of the Gesher Fund to help people through the COVID-19, the establishment of CAP, which today that, you know, today protects more than 250,000 people in the city of Johannesburg, and actually has brought down contact crime between 80% and 90% in these areas of operation.
Yeah.
It's about spiritual leadership to the country as well.
Yeah, you won awards for that.
The Jewish community.
Didn't you win an award for CAP?
But the truth is, I mean, it's the real award there is the fact that, you know, thank God it's protected lives and saved people from trauma.
Yeah.
You know, in such a way. And also it's about representing the community to the government and to the broader South African Jewish community.
Sure.
So because South Africa is such a religious country, the natural instinct of the government and this country is to look towards religious leaders. So of course the Board of Deputies here does outstanding work in representing our community at government level, but the government also naturally is looking for religious leaders. So that means playing a role in, you know, official state functions. It means during this COVID-19, the entire thing, the president was calling meetings with religious leaders and getting our input and advice. It's that direct communication. It's also representing Jewish values in the broader society.
Sure.
So one of the other projects which I did a few years ago is the Bill of Responsibilities, which I drafted together with the then Minister of Education, Naledi Pandor, which as a result of my initiative and leading an interfaith initiative around it, that document of the Bill of Responsibilities, which is a mirror image of the Bill of Rights, is now curriculum of the Department of Education in South Africa and taught in schools throughout South Africa. And it's based on the Torah concept that when you have rights, that need to come with responsibilities, because in Torah we talk about mitzvahs.
Sure.
So it's a very broad mandate. That covers many different areas.
All right, Rabbi, let's get back to the structure of the UOS. How many members of your current board were voted in at the last conference, and how many were co-opted?
I don't know. I can't remember. I can't remember.
Okay. And who is your board?
I don't have the list in front of me. The chairman of the board is Harold Novick. Harold is an outstanding person who has served the community for many decades.
We just need names. Okay.
As chairman of Sydenham Shul for many decades. There is Benji Porter, who's the vice chairman of the UOS. Kenny Rabson, who's on the board. Bradley Cypress. I'm trying to remember them.
Adrian Chaga.
In front of me.
Or Adrian Chaga.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saul Saxton.
It sounds like you have the list in front of you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay, just needed names so that the community knows who sits on the board.
Stephen Isaacson. I don't have the list in front of me, but as you said, Saul Saxton, Tony Ellis, Adrian Chiga, Lawrence Brick,
Bradley Cifras, Benji Porter.
Bradley Cifras. Yeah.
Okay, Rabbi, you said that the board sits at the top of the organogram, that the three different functions of the UOS report to the board. Is that correct?
Yes. Ultimately, the board has to take final responsibility for everything. But you see, one thing that's important, and this is an element that the UOS has modernized.
Yeah.
What the UOS has modernized, I think, is that there's some communal organizations where the board of non-executive directors who are volunteers actually get involved in day-to-day operations of an organization. And, you know, I, for one, I don't think that's healthy, because volunteers will, by definition, have limited time. So one of the things that the UOS has been modernizing over the years, and it's a journey. I mean, we're not there yet, and we're hoping to, you know, get better and better at it.
Sure.
But it's a journey of giving more and more responsibility to the executives in the organizations and holding them accountable for it. But not getting, you know, operational on a day-to-day basis. But I'm a little bit confused here, Kathy.
Yeah.
And Howard. I mean, I'm saying all of this started about like the kashrut issues and honey fields and all of that. And, I mean, I'm happy to answer.
No.
So
this is setting a foundation. I mean, we've received calls asking for the number for the UOS because there's been a death in the family. So it's really just creating an identity of this organization,
okay.
The UOS, that is really central to our lives.
Okay.
Okay, yes.
The line, again, the line.
All right. That should be better. All right. So we've got the board at the top. Underneath, we have the office of the chief rabbi. We have the Beth Din, and underneath the Beth Din, we have Kashrut, and we have the Din Torahs, right?
Yeah, well, the Kashrut department operates operationally independently. I mean, it's under the Beth Din in the sense that the Beth Din has to say that the operations are in order to be able to give the hechsher. In other words, it can't if it feels that. But it operates operationally. The Beth Din's not directing the operations of the Kashrut department. That's by the MD of the Kashrut department, Rabbi Dovi Goldstein, who, by the way, I know I've said this 100 times, but he's not related to me at all. We just happen to share the same name. But
we're all related.
We all related. We go back.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Rabbi, I'm actually sitting with. So it's interesting that that's the structure. I'm sitting with the minutes of a meeting of the Executive Council of the Union of Orthodox Synagogues of South Africa. These are minutes from a meeting held on the 5th of December 2013 at 5 p.m., where the board actually ceded all their powers to you, essentially.
No, that's not true. That's not true, and that's not a true reflection of that document. That's not true at all. I think it's very important to stick to the facts.
Okay, so...
That document... The board ultimately remains responsible for every part of the organization. And I want to stress this to the community. Every budget is approved by the board. Every salary is determined by the board. There is a remuneration committee, which is made up of the non-executive directors of the board. They approve and set every salary. They benchmark the salaries against equivalent communal salaries below corporate level. They are responsible ultimately for the appointment of any of the executives in the organization. And this is what that document refers to is what I was saying to you now.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, at the end of 2013, beginning of 2014, the UOS was in a major financial and operational crisis at that time.
Sure.
And, major operational crisis at that time within the kosher department, within the finances, and it needed to be cleaned up. And so what the board realized at the time is that as volunteers, they cannot get into the detail of the operational detail of a day-to-day thing. So they came to me and to Rabbi Kutztag, and they said to us, as members of this executive management team, they said, will you take on extra responsibility to help fix this organization and turn it around? Now that was, I was very reluctant to do that, as was Rabbi Kutztag, because we both felt, listen, he's full-time running the Beth Din, I'm full-time running the office of the chief rabbi. But the board came to us and they said, look, this organization, if we don't do something to remedy it, will actually, face insolvency and completely come apart. So I had no option but to say, okay, I have to help the community. I will take on extra responsibility with Rabbi Kutztag, to help get involved in the operations and the restructuring of the organization. And so what that document refers to is the handing over of operational responsibility to me and to Rabbi Kutztag to try and fix and to turn the organization around, which we set up that structure. And now, after those years, 5-6 years down the line, the organization has in fact been turned around. And, you know, I can tell you that when we came in, to have a look at the situation, it was much worse than originally I had thought. The board came to me and they begged me literally and Rabbi Kutztag to take on this heavy responsibility, which I didn't want to do. And I would much rather be, teaching and spreading Shabbos and doing all of those wonderful positive things than getting involved in the messiness of this turnaround and the fix up. And,
sure.
But I did it. And when we lifted up the hood, I can tell you that what we found was horrifying, and we've never spoken about
okay.
this. In
all right, Rabbi, I just want to stick to
it's
the.
Just an interesting question. Do you regret not telling the community how bad things were?
You know, I can tell you this. One needs to work to fix an organization, and you try to turn it around, and it's important to get the job done. important to get the job done and to fix them, to turn around. I mean, I can tell you that.
So is that a no? So you don't. I'm just wondering, when we're sitting here today, a lot of this is about, and I'm sorry, Kathy, I don't want to derail you, but a lot of this to me is about communication, and it's about communication, transparency, just telling people like it is. And the world maybe some time ago is very different to the world today, where we actually don't expect perfection. We don't think anyone's perfect. We don't think any organization is perfect. So I'm wondering, sitting where you are today, and I know that it hasn't been an easy few weeks. It hasn't been easy few weeks for anyone in the community. Looking where you stand today, looking back, do you think, you know what, I could have done that differently, maybe in terms of communication. I could have brought the community a little bit more into my confidence when I did lift the hood and saw how bad it was. Well, let me ask you this. If that happened again today, would you fix first and then tell, or would you do it differently and say, guys, you know, it's really not great, but we're going to fix it?
Well, you know, it's a question of what you mean by tell, because the UOS as an organization, over all of these years, has regular meetings with Chairman and Rabbonim, who are the basic constituents of it. And we shared often at the conferences. We shared details and shared with the community. But ultimately, I think what is so important is the process of fixing it. And I can tell you this, and it's an important point here that Kathy has raised. And I wasn't going to go into this because I didn't think the community wanted to dig down into the history. But now that you've mentioned it, I want you to know that since that time, the Kashrut department has been completely turned around in terms of its professionalism. You know that as the years went on, and then Rabbi Dovi came in, that they came to have a look at the data of all of the ingredients, and it was like converting all of that which was on paper. There was an IT system, but it wasn't properly functioning. They had to come in, fix all of that, turn all of that around, and it relates also to this pricing issue. Because one of the messes that they found was there was no consistent pricing. Everything was ad hoc, dependent, you know, on how they felt on the day. So this was about systemizing. It was also about fixing up the finances. I think it's important for the community to know.
Okay, so
under previous,
all right. So maybe you can make your past financials for the past 6 years available. But Rabbi, I do want to get on, because you said that this was, you know, you and Rabbi Kurtzdag stood in. You took on extra duties because of where the UOS was at that time, and that's what these minutes are. Rabbi Kurtzdag hasn't been replaced. So who are those duties falling to now?
Well, when Rabbi Kurtzdag retired, so then I've been carrying those duties alone. But let me say this. It hasn't been alone in the sense that we have outstanding Dayanim, and we have a broad team. We've got 5 Dayanim who are all brilliant people, highly capable. They're running an excellent department. Obviously, you know, there's always room for improvement. Rabbi Dovi is running the Kashrut department. Jared Abelson is an outstanding financial director. Mm. So we've got talented people in the organization. The organization has 40 employees, and they're incredibly talented people. And you know that they are people who are working day and night for the community. And you know, I must say, in a certain sense, Howard, as to your question, you know, I think maybe it would have been great to show, because ultimately all this hard work has been done and all of these incredible improvements in the organization have actually been done without looking for the limelight or without looking for the acknowledgement. But sometimes then people don't know what has actually been done and the hard work that's gone into it. Mm. Then they can't appreciate the level of the turnaround. That, you know, that I can tell you that our levels and systems in the Kashrut department are global and world class, to the extent that just recently, you know, with Emirates Air, the OU and BD South Africa are combining on that, and the OU is delegating a lot of the operational responsibility to our Kashrut department. Now, OU is the biggest, most prestigious Kashrut organization in the world, and they've delegated, and they're doing this as a partner with our Beth Din Kosher department. which is such a feather in their cap. Oh, you would never work with a partner that they didn't believe. No. And they've seen it.
Great.
Because the two most senior people of OU Kashrut came here after the Stan and Pete event. And they came here and they saw and they're working very closely all the time with Rabbi Dovi Goldstein. So we can be very proud as a community. Our Hepsha stands together with Hepshas all over the world.
Rabbi, I still want to speak about the Shabbos project. I still want to speak about Kashrut. Can we try and kind of move through the next series of questions, you know, a little bit faster? I know that there are explanations and I think that, you know, this interview would be 3 hours long
you're raising, you know, deep issues.
Yeah.
You know, so we got to choose, you know, you must choose what you want to.
All right.
About.
So financials. Let's move on to financials. When last did the OAS release its financials publicly?
So the financials of the 2019 financials, the 2019 financials at the moment are being audited by Grant Thornton. As soon as those are done, they will be published. The financials at the moment, and I can tell you the exact figures. I'm very happy and
okay, we'll go through that.
To share them. The annual budget of the UOS, depending on the year, is somewhere between 30 and 33 million rand a year. The current financials of 2019 indicate a profit. You talk about the profit and loss of about 216,000 rand. You know, that's in process of being audited by BDO Grant Thornton, and those financials will be released as soon as that audit is completed, which should be within the next few weeks, so people can watch out for that. There are 40 employees, a budget of around 30 to 33 million rand. Apart from the salary cost, the op cost, insurance, travel, the IT, all the security, all of those things, that makes up the budget of the 40 employees. 30 are in the Kashrut department, and then 10 are spread across the Beth Din and the office of the Chief Rabbi.
Okay, so are Grant Thornton your official auditors?
BDO Grant Thornton, yeah.
Okay. Where does the UIS income come from? How did you keep the organization running? Where does the income come from?
Okay, so I think this is a very important point that needs to be explained, because when it comes to the Kashrut department, and this leads to a lot of confusion, and I really need to explain this. Mm-hmm. Leads to a lot of confusion. The Kashrut department has two divisions that operate in a certain way completely separately. The one division is the food services division, which is bakeries, butcheries, caterers, all of those sort of things, which are catering only or primarily to the kosher consumer. Those small businesses catering primarily to the kosher consumer are serviced by the kosher department at cost, or actually often at a loss, because we view it as the kosher department, under the mandate of the board, views that as a community service to ensure that the community has those facilities. So those costs are brought down to the absolute minimum that they can be, and it's always done at cost. Then there's another division of the kosher department. And that is the part which deals with all of the food companies, the manufacturing companies who are manufacturing product for 60 million South Africans. These are all the food companies that manufacture all these things. And then they want a Heksha, because for them, it's good for their product to have the Heksha, because it helps them get extra purchases from the Jewish community, from the Muslim community, from Christian communities, from the vegans, vegetarians, etc. So it's valuable to them. And so the Kashrut department enters into a negotiation to provide them with the Heksha. That pricing model, which is where all of this started, is determined on an objective basis of number of factories, number of inspections required, the complexity of it. And just to give you that it is from that division that the most of the revenues of the organization come out of that division, which is essentially out of corporate South Africa, which doesn't cost the Jewish community. It doesn't cost the Jewish community 1 cent. That in fact, what it does is it enables the Jewish community to be able to afford to have a Kashrut department, a Beth Din, and an office of the Chief Rabbi. And the funds come from companies. When you ask these big companies, these food companies that are paying for the Heksha, why are they doing it? They're not doing it for tzedakah. They're not doing it like as some sort of charity that they want to try and help the Jewish community. They're doing it because they see real value. And so what is amazing about this model is that the model is that providing a real service to real companies, and then the funds of those are used then to support the community infrastructure, which is necessary. But as you can see, when you have a look at it, of the 40 employees, 30 are coming out of the kosher department. And I think I have to say this, because all of this did start with Honeyfield. And I want to just to say this one point. Honeyfield, just, and it's an example to show you the complexity of this. Honeyfields has 88 products, okay, for which they were being charged 17,000 rand a year. That's 88 products. If you divide that is 17 rand a product per month, okay, because we're charging them less than 1,500 rand a month.
Yeah.
And for that, you need a food technologist. You need a compliance officer. You need visits to factories. We're providing tremendous value, because the kosher department is a certification organization, and it is very strict with its certification.
Sure.
And so when you're dealing with 50,000 products, there are 50,000 products, and each one of those products has tens of ingredients, and having to inspect 600 factories all around the country, that's providing a real service,
okay,
which is valuable. So it's something, and by the way, just in terms
of, I was actually keeping all of this for the kashrut discussion. So
okay,
if,
but let's throw
you know,
it now, because I, you know.
Well, I want to know, I've got other questions around this. How much does the kashrut department make?
I don't have the exact figures in front of me now. I don't have.
How much does it spend?
I don't have the figures of the details of it. I can tell you that the overall budget of the organization is between 30 and 33 million, and the budget year is divided. And that's why I also said to you at the time when you asked me to come onto the interview, I said I want to come on with
the documents,
the
sure.
From the finance department.
All right, I just want to move on, Rabbi.
To be able to
sure.
give those details.
Well, here's one that you'll definitely know. Chief Rabbi's office, how much money does the Chief Rabbi's office make?
You know, I don't have the figures in front of me. I'm happy to share those figures, and we can make those figures 100% open to the community. Of the budget of the UOS, it is, percentage-wise, I don't have the percentage in front of me. It is a smaller percentage, much smaller than the other divisions.
And how much does it cost?
But also, what I can say is this: all of these budgets are determined by the board and determined
okay.
by the remuneration.
That's all right.
And also, and as well as the salaries, the salaries are determined by the remuneration committees. Everything is. Everything is passed through the board, and I can also let me make the point when you talk about the office of the chief rabbi.
Mm.
The money that the UOS puts into the office of the chief rabbi doesn't nearly even begin to touch the services delivered. So when I was talking about all those various projects,
yeah.
Shabbos project, Sinai Daba, Generation Sinai, the Beit Midrash project at King David and Herzliya, the CAP, Gesher, Autjet, all of these projects are completely fundraised outside. So in fact, 80% of the work that is done from the Office of the Chief Rabbi is funded from outside of the organization. In fact, the U.S. gets tremendous service, because what the U.S. essentially does is fund the bare minimum of an office. I mean, in terms of my direct employees in my office, I have a PA, I have a part-time project manager, I have a part-time writer, and then there's obviously the security to cover me. That is the entire office. So when you say, listen, an office of that made up of one full-time employee and two half-time employees, and also a part-time person who runs the bat mitzvah program, when you have a look at that and then say, how's that little team meant to deliver it to a community, security and welfare and religion.
No, we get that. You don't have to feel defensive about it. I mean,
I'm not defensive at all. I'm just making the point that in fact, the probably 80% of the funding of the office of the chief rabbi is coming from outside projects of specific donors to those
okay.
projects, and not 1 cent of the kashrut money goes to any of those projects.
Okay, so the chief rabbi's office, if you don't have the figures in front of you of the costs, how much does the Beth Din give you a year?
Kathy, when you asked me to come onto this interview, I
sure.
said to you, I want to come onto the interview with a board member and with our financial director so I can give you all of the things. I am not involved in the nitty-gritty operations of these divisions. I do not have the numbers in front of me, and that That is just the fact. I told you before, I said to you, I don't think it's a good idea for me to come on alone. Please let me come on with the others so we can get
all right. So I've just got a few questions that you probably will know the answer to, but I think maybe for the finances, we need to get one of your board members.
Sorry, the line's going. I can't hear. The line's not clear.
Okay. So, let's move on then. Are there, on the 4th of June this year, the US sent out communication about retrenchments due to COVID-19. So, you retrenched a whole lot of people. Did any senior leadership or staff take salary cuts?
We will have to look at the details from the financial director. To the best of my knowledge, no,
okay.
They didn't. And I can tell you also with that process of the retrenchments and the cutting back, the board took the view, and it was something that was driven by the chairman and the remuneration committee. We took the view that they're looking at the situation with COVID, and you must understand in COVID, and I think this is a very important point to understand, mm-hmm. in the context of COVID, the UOS waived all affiliation fees to the synagogues, and it waived also on a temporary basis fees of the establishments, obviously, and the catering. In fact, already by January or so, we'd already been in discussions with the caterers to completely waive the UOS simcha fee. So there was a lot of millions of lost revenues on that, and the organisation had a very difficult decision to make at the time of what to do, because also no one knew how much fall off there would be in terms of the manufacturing and the food companies, and what would be the impact of the economy on them, which would then have an impact on the organisation. And so the board at the time, under the remuneration committee, had to have a look and see what to do. The retrenchments and the downscaling that had to be done was led by the chairman Harold Novick together with his remuneration committee, and they did that in a way looking also at how to make the organisation more efficient. And I've heard this from a lot of different places, organisations and businesses, is that sometimes in a crisis like COVID, it forces you to relook at everything with a sharper eye to see, can this same thing be done, but in a way that is more efficient.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, and that's obviously a very painful situation. But then what happens is after COVID, then you actually have an organization which is able to deliver the same services to the community, but at less cost. And then that becomes a better model for the sustainability for the future. And this is something that all of our communal organizations, we need to be able to build communal organizations that are financially sustainable for the future. And I think through the modernization process that has happened with the UOS over these years, and you know, it's an important...
Chief Rabbi, do you not want to get to talk about the Shabbos project?
Well, the truth is, I just have to add one thing. One of the reasons, going back to Howard's question at the, about not speaking about this more often, is that we don't want to embarrass publicly the people who are responsible for the mess that was created before. So we actually didn't talk about it because we didn't want to humiliate those people, but we've been through a process of modernization. And
we're actually running out of time. We've only got a few more minutes, but before Kathy comes back to you on that point that you're raising, looking at the 2 weeks and the last couple of weeks, and looking at the firestorm that was ignited by a company that, as I said in my intro, is completely meaningless to me personally, and I would imagine meaningless to a lot of people. What this indicated is that there's a level of discontent, despite all the incredible work that you've done, continue to do, etc. There's still discontent. What is your takeaway message from that? What are you, when you sit by yourself in your room, what are you thinking you could do differently, should have done differently, and will do differently going forward?
Look, it's a great question. I think that what is important, and one thing I hear what you say about communicating more about the level of the complexity and the work which has been done over all of these years. As I said, you know, sometimes you hold back. You don't want to embarrass people. You want to just get the job done and not talk enough about it. I think, you know, it's about that communication, because it's about people appreciating, a sense of the complexity of it. But to me, the most important thing I think, which is so important, is this idea that our community need to be our partners in this process and to say that we're going to work together on this. And it's something that's important. I want to find a way where this partnership can flourish. And I think sometimes, you know, just hearing the basic information helps people understand.
100%.
When they hear, because there's so much to share and there's so much good which is happening and there are mistakes for sure, but none of those mistakes are mistakes which are things which can't easily be rectified with the right kind of feedback, with listening, to hearing where things are going wrong. But I think in that context, we need to find a way to make that dialogue one which is positive and constructive. It needs to be honest and open, for sure, but it must be in the atmosphere of how can we build a better South African Jewish community? Yeah. How can we build a better UOS?
And partnerships. Partnerships,
yeah,
for sure.
Partnerships. Partnerships is the way to go on this.
Yeah. So can we talk about a partnership that has been very successful, and that is the Shabbos Project. So how many cities now subscribe to the Shabbos Project, Chief Rabbi?
You know, it's such a beautiful part of our South African Jewish community. And, you know, I'm so proud of our community because it started in 2013. And it's because the South African Jewish community, our beloved community, embraced the Shabbos Project all those years back that it has spread now to more than 1,600 cities and 100 countries all over the world. And there are amazing things happening, absolutely all over. You know, we've got even like, for example, requests from partners, whether it's in Uzbekistan or London or Buenos Aires. There are amazing things happening. For example, this year, obviously, because people can't get together for the in-person events because of COVID, there are amazing virtual events which are happening all over the world. The whole of Argentina is doing a challah bake. There's an incredible challah bake happening across North America.
Amazing.
Run out of Arizona. And the other powerful message of this year's Shabbos Project is that real sense of bring Shabbos home and make it part of your home.
Amazing.
And we're doing also something so beautiful. I know
we ran out of time, so if we could please just leave this, people can go to the website and have a look. But you said earlier that the UOS doesn't fund the Shabbos Project. So how do you fund it?
So the Shabbos Project and all of these projects are funded from donors, like for example Sinai Ndaba. I'm sure that everybody can see, if you come to Sinai Ndaba, you see the corporate sponsors. Generation Sinai is sponsored by Liberty Life, and Shabbos Project is sponsored by people who have vision and who believe in it.
Okay, well certainly something that was news to me is that the Shabbos Project is actually a franchise, and communities around the world pay $2,500 per year to participate. So where does money go? That's
oh my goodness, Kathy.
Yes.
That's
a lot of money.
That is fake news.
It's not fake news. Who's Dale Belkin, Daniel Ginsberg, and Justin Trigger?
So, Kathy?
Yes.
Firstly, the line is breaking up. Can you put the microphone close to you and just say that again? What are you saying, Kathy?
Who are Dale Belkin, Daniel Ginsberg, and Justin Trigger?
What is that relevant? What was your question before? You're saying that there are the partners around the world are paying a fee.
Yes, for the Shabbos Project. That's exactly what I'm saying.
That is fake news. That is a lie. That is fake news, and that is a lie. Every community around the world runs the Shabbos Project where they are. They pay nothing. They pay nothing to the Central Shabbos Project. Nothing. In fact, they could and they should, because we're helping them with all of their marketing material. We do not charge anything. Kathy, that is fake news. It's a lie.
It was a question. It's not fake news.
Yeah.
Well, question which you said is a lie.
Well, okay.
Okay.
Yes. It is totally false.
And now thank you very, very much.
I see. Talk about the Shabbos Project, so you could stick that in right at the end.
No, it was a question. Okay. Thank you very, very much for your time. And, Howard, thank you very much.
Time is 9:04. We have run out of time, unfortunately. In fact, we're over time. That was Chief Rabbi Warren Goldstein in conversation with Kathy Kader, talking about some of the issues, that have been problematic in the community and, addressing them. I hope, that you did get some of the answers that you have been looking for.